From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
There are 72 community college districts and 112 community colleges in California, educating approximately 2.6 million students each year, nearly 25% of the nation's community college student population. Under the state's Master Plan for Higher Education, California's community colleges have offered an open door to anyone who wanted to attend. Years of state funding cuts, however, have made the state's community colleges reconsider whether they can be all things to all people. Increasingly, California's community colleges are being asked to do more with less. Who should pay for the increasing cost of a community college education? Are there any new strategies or techniques that can lower the cost of providing a community college education? And what can be done to increase graduation and transfer rates? We'll talk to Jennifer Kuhn, Deputy Legislative Analyst and an expert on education at the nonpartisan California Legislative Analyst Office, and Dr. Bryce Harris, Chancellor of the California Community College System.
We'll also hear from Jill Stearns, President of Modesto Junior College, Merced College President Ron Taylor, and West Hills Lemoore College President Don Morkentine.
California's community colleges, can they meet the state's educational and workforce needs?
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. Governor Brown has an ambitious plan to overhaul California's community colleges. What are his proposals, and how will they impact community colleges in California? Our guest is Jennifer Kuhn, Deputy Legislative Analyst and expert in education issues with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office. Welcome to the Maddie Report. Well, first, how are California's community colleges actually funded?
The community colleges receive about $6.5 billion. The majority of it, about 60%, comes from the state. About one-third of it comes from local property tax revenues. The remainder comes from a combination of student fee revenues, lottery proceeds, and federal funds. The bulk of it, Prop 98 funding, which is most of the state money and the local property tax revenues, goes out to colleges on a per-student basis.
You know, I think a lot of people are a little bit confused about Prop 98. They usually think about that as K through 12, but it actually covers K through 14, which is the community colleges, just for clarification. The governor wants to fund community colleges based on course completions rather than enrollment. You think that idea should be rejected in favor of an alternative funding model that balances student access with student success. Why do you think that?
Well, currently, the way the system works, the state funds a student if they're there about a fifth of the way through the term. So the governor is responding to that and saying, well, no, we really want students to make it the whole way. But course completion is not a major problem. System-wide course completion is about 85%. So rather than focusing on this one issue...
So why aren't they graduating? If 85% are completing their courses, why is the graduation rate so low?
They're failing to meet these more important academic milestones, obviously. Something's happening between completing one course and completing a program or obtaining a degree.
Yeah, completing a course is not completing a degree. Two separate things.
Okay. So we're trying to get the state to focus on those more seminal milestones.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, though, as a professor myself, that is that going to create an incentive? Course completions are the funding model. Is that going to create an incentive for professors to lower standards? And I think that's just an issue probably people might want to think about. But let's talk about redesigning funding. How do you think community college funding should be redesigned?
We've recommended to the legislature that they have a system that balances enrollment. So part of it is still based upon the number of students served, but then part of it is based on achieving these, again, more important milestones. So there would be multiple performance measures. They would take into account things like completing basic skills courses, completing gateway transfer courses, completing a program, getting a certificate, getting an associate's degree, and then colleges would be rewarded to the extent that they were able to achieve those goals.
It sounds like you and the governor, the governor's office seem to be going in the same direction.
I think we both want to shift from being purely enrollment-based to have some outcomes. We just think there could be better outcomes that the state uses.
Okay. How affordable, by the way, are California community colleges?
The fees are the lowest in the country.
The
lowest in the country, and about half of community college students don't even have to pay that low fee. They're able to get a waiver from it. And once you take into account Cal grants, BOG fee waivers, community college students are covering about 6% of their education-related costs. In addition to that, in addition to the education portion being affordable, there are 112 colleges, 68 off-site campuses, which mean most folks can stay at home while they go to college, another way to keep college affordable.
It seems that the
mission of the community college has always been open access, and they're certainly, well, they seem to be meeting it. Only students are only paying 6% of the cost of their education, so the taxpayer is picking up the rest. The governor has also proposed a tuition freeze for at least 1 year. Your office is not real keen on tuition freezes. You think you might better focus on things like capping state-subsidized units that students can take. What do you mean by that exactly, and how would it work?
Both the administration and our office think it's reasonable to set a limit on the number of units that the state will subsidize and then work through the kinds of courses that would count toward that cap. So currently, again, there is no limit. So a student could be at the community colleges for 5, 6, 7 years and the state's still covering the cost. So the governor is saying, well, why don't we give the student, an average student, about an extra year? We think that's reasonable. And then, again, thinking through, should we count courses taken in high school by examination by other providers, ones that were never originally subsidized by the state? We do think there are certain courses to include or exclude.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jennifer Kuhn from the Legislative Analyst Office for being here. California is home to approximately 2.6 million community college students each year, nearly 25% of the nation's community college student population. The person who oversees the statewide system is our guest today. Bryce Harris is the chancellor of the California Community College System. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
So one of the key issues is access to a community college education. But one result of the state's open access mission and policy is to admit some unprepared or underprepared students. We have something like 90% of the incoming community college students are unprepared for math, and 75% are unprepared for college-level English. So what's being done to improve college readiness of incoming community college students?
Well, college readiness is a very complicated question because it involves not only recent high school graduates, which do make up a good share of our enrollment, but also folks who've been out of school for a few years and now realize they have to have more education in order to compete, or those who are adults who have been in the workforce for quite some time and now they're coming back to us. So there are a variety of reasons why about two-thirds of them come to us unprepared for college. Interestingly, if a student comes to us as a college student, they have a better than 70% chance of completing successfully. If they come to us unprepared for college, that percentage drops down nearly half. And so we have a student success initiative underway right now, and it includes a variety of activities that are designed to help students succeed, especially those who are in need of remediation and basic skills. And right now we're especially interested in connecting with K-12 through the Common Core curriculum they're installing to make sure that what students believe they need to graduate from high school matches up well with what they need to get into college.
That seems to make a lot of sense. What about tuition and affordability? There's a discussion about freezing tuition at community colleges for about 1 year, but no promises really after that. Should there be a tuition freeze beyond 1 year at community colleges?
Well, we believe that low fees as a public policy make a lot of sense for California. Obviously, living in California is more expensive than many of the other parts of the country, so the complete cost of education is more than just those fees. However, what we're concerned about is the sort of erratic fee policy that our students have been subjected to. The legislature actually sets our fees, and as you can imagine, in good times, they actually have lowered the fees, and in times that are bad, they take them up, and sometimes dramatically.
And that's kind of counterintuitive. When the economy's doing poorly and people can't afford it, they're raising fees.
That's exactly right. In fact, we believe a reasonable, a modest, and predictable fee policy in California makes sense. Let's index fees to the cost of living and let them go up so that families and students can plan.
Let me ask you this. California community college fees are among the lowest, I think the lowest in the nation. Should they be adjusted, though, to more accurately reflect the cost of a community college education?
Well, again, the total cost of an education includes those living expenses, includes textbooks. So, yes, our fees are low, but the complete cost of going to college is not necessarily that much lower than many other areas of the country. We don't believe it's in California's best interest to make it more difficult for students to go to college. Some would argue that that students ought to be paying a greater percentage of the fees, and I think there certainly are states where that's being done, but those states tend to have a lower rate of attendance in higher education.
Well, let me ask you this. There's a lot of discussion about these people called super seniors, people that, you know, the professional student, they never want to graduate. And there's discussion about unit caps and maybe charging them more money for the courses that they take because the state is subsidizing those classes. Do you think that we should go toward unit caps and increase tuition for those folks? And would any exceptions be made to a policy like that?
Well, in fact, the Board of Governors just recently created a 100-unit cap and said that if students exceed that, they still can go to college, but they drop to the back of the line in terms of priority for registration, which makes it very difficult for them to get the courses they need. Now, the governor's recommended a hard cap, and he said that if you make exceptions, then colleges, you have to pay that cost. We don't happen to believe, especially considering a number of adults who get an education and then realize they're no longer competitive in the workplace and they have to come back to college, we don't believe setting a unit cap makes sense. A few years back, the state tried a BA fee and said if you had a bachelor's degree, then you had to pay considerably higher per unit. But the research showed the very people that negatively impacted were those who needed to return to college to make themselves more competitive.
Yeah, there are some statistics I saw on this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw that 350,000 people already have 60-plus units at a community college, and 95,000 have 90 or more units. And typically, it would take 60 units to graduate. So there is a large cohort there that are beyond the 60 units needed to graduate. Let me ask you this. What about open access? Do you think that competes, that mission competes with the goal of student success in community colleges?
It absolutely does. If you are in an environment where you're trying to protect open access and encourage students to succeed at higher and higher rates, and you have inadequate funding, those two values are in conflict. However, they are extremely important values. You can't achieve what this country needs to achieve in terms of an educated workforce. We've fallen now in that younger quartile to 16th in the globe in terms of the percentage of our population between 24 and 34 who have a college degree, whereas the oldsters like me, we're still third in the globe. That's a trend we need to reverse. And so in order to do that, we both have to have students that are in college succeeding at higher numbers, and we have to make certain we get more people in college as well.
We're talking with the Chancellor of the California Community College System, Dr. Bryce Harris. I want to turn our attention to lowering the cost of community college education. Is there a cheaper way to offer education? For example, online courses. Are they better, worse, or comparable to the traditional professor in front of the classroom educational experience?
Well, California community colleges are an excellent bargain for the taxpayers of the state of California. And over the last 4 years, we've had to shoulder tremendous financial cuts. Our faculty have seen their class sizes go from about 26 to 31, and they've really shouldered an awful lot of students to try to protect access in the system. But yes, there is a lot of talk across the country now about online education, and the governor has recommended a program at all three of the systems of higher ed in online education. Now, California's community colleges have really been doing a great deal of that. We're the largest provider of online education in the state of California.
Yeah, you're kind of the forefront of that. I think I read somewhere that 10% of your classes are offered online.
That's right, and one out of every four students is taking an online course every semester. However, we do believe that there's a way to garner even more efficiency by at the state level, providing a common portal for students to access individual colleges so that if a student in Weed, California needs a course they can't get there, that they might go online and get one that's offered by San Diego City College. And
Fresno City College.
That's right. Or if they have a common spot, common place to go, then we think that makes sense for the taxpayers and certainly for the students.
You know, the governor's proposing funding for something called a common learning management system for the entire community college system. What is a common learning management system, and do you think it will make California community colleges more cost efficient?
Well, I do. It's that common portal I talked about a moment ago. It basically is a way to manage online education, and a lot of our colleges have online course management systems. Some of them are similar, some of them are dissimilar, and obviously we think the governor's proposal to make that approach a common one is in the best interest of Californians and especially our students.
You know, there's another thing they're talking about, and that is giving, I think students might like this, credit by exam. Life experience, knowledge that you have. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, experiential learning's been around a long time.
It's a small percentage of what you do right now, correct?
It is a small percentage.
I think I read 1% or something.
Yeah, but it's an important part. You look at all of our veterans that are returning, they often have experiences they've gleaned through their military training that's applicable for credit. It's something you have to be very careful about. We expect the faculty to take the lead role in this because they're the guardians of the curriculum and of the degree, and so they need to be very comfortable in evaluating experience. But we do believe there's a lot of good learning going on out there. And as MOOCs become more prevalent
across the country. You might want to define what MOOCs are.
Well, massive online education.
And basically, and by massive, you do mean massive.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in some instances, institutions that have literally thousands and thousands of students taking a course at the same time.
Yeah, there is one question, though, is if you're a professor and you're teaching thousands of students, what kind of interaction can you have with those students?
Well, we don't happen to believe that sort of mass approach makes a lot of sense, especially for young students that are just entering college. In fact, our research shows that once students are up into the curriculum, they do better in online instruction, but especially in the early part of their education, they do need a campus-based experience. They do need an interaction with a faculty member and students. You can get some of that online, but research shows that they don't do as well as in traditional instruction.
It seems like the governor wants to also change the funding formula from kind of, you know, enrollment-driven to more course completion or degree completion, certificate completion-driven. Kind of the focus seems to be getting them out, getting them through the system. To secure, that'll result in more funding, but won't that also result in grade inflation, maybe in looser standards, as people say, we're going to get paid as to how many students get through the system, so we'll just lower our standards to get more people out the door?
Well, this outcomes-based approach was proposed a couple of years ago in the legislature, and from it grew our Student Success Initiative, because we actually do believe you have to be very cautious about funding outcomes for fear that you'll leave an entire generation of Californians behind. In other words, if we look back 10 years from now and we see all of our rates have improved for transfer and graduation, and yet we've accomplished that by shutting the door on the students that need us the most, then we've failed. So we do believe that outcomes-based instruction is something we must approach carefully.
Now, there's one proposal I'm guessing you like, and it's actually a major theme by most major recommendations, whether it's the legislative analyst, the student task force, or the Little Hoover Commission. And all of those folks are saying we should centralize coordinate with the chancellor's office, that the community college system should have a stronger chancellor's office, frankly. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that's going to result in more cost savings to kind of centralize more of the activities through your office?
Well, I don't actually support a great deal of centralization at the state level. The California's community college system, 112 colleges, 73 districts, are governed by locally elected trustees who understand the education needs in one community versus another. So what we really have in California is more of a confederation, a group of districts that are coordinated, and the direction is set by a gubernatorially appointed state board of governors. And that confederation actually works pretty well. Now, I do believe there's opportunity for more coordination at a state level, especially when we get into things like online education. But there's no substitute for locally elected trustees determining what is educationally important for their community.
We're talking with the Chancellor of the California Community College System, Dr. Bryce Harris. I want to turn our attention to graduation and transfer rates. Research shows that there's nothing more important to the success of a student than the person who's standing in front of the classroom. So what are you doing to improve teaching at community colleges?
You know, we have fabulous faculty at every one of our colleges in the state. The pace of change, however, for all of us has accelerated dramatically, and that's why we are spending more energy on professional development for faculty. Certainly not as much as I think we need to ultimately, but when I entered the teaching field in 1972, my brain or my body of knowledge was good for probably a number of decades. Nowadays, unfortunately, the way things change, faculty need updating all the time.
Wasn't there a categorical, a specific amount of money given for faculty development?
Yes.
At one time?
Yes.
Is that still being given?
No. It unfortunately went by the way of budget cuts. A lot of districts have maintained that at the local level, and we're certainly advocating under the dome to see that funding return. We really believe in order to have currency.
Under the dome, you're talking about the state capital.
That's right. In order to have the currency with our students, we've got to have currency with our faculty.
Okay. What about getting or encouraging students to complete degrees and certificates in a timely manner? What are you doing in that regard to kind of help that?
Our Student Success Initiative really is focused on trying to help students understand they really do have to be more purposeful about their education. They have to set education goals. They have to move expeditiously toward those goals. Just simply hanging around college doesn't do them them any good, and it certainly doesn't do the state of California any good. We need those students to complete their degrees, get into the world of work, get on to their transfer institution, and in doing that, help the state and themselves.
How good is California's community college system in getting students to transfer successfully?
Students that come to us prepared for college actually hit their transfer goals, become transfer ready in pretty good percentages.
That's a pretty big caveat.
It's
though.
The ones who come with remedial needs that find the greatest challenge. And so we're beginning to speak out to students and to tell them they really need to take the 11th and 12th grade year in high school seriously. They need to make certain that their math and English skills are current when they leave high school and come to community colleges so they don't waste a lot of their time in remediation.
You know, the California Master Plan for Higher Education states, quote, "A primary mission of the California community colleges is to advance California's economic growth and global competitiveness through education, training, and services that contribute to a continuous workforce improvement." So not every community college student has the goal of going on to a four-year college. Many of them are going to join the work world right after they go through the community college system. What are you doing to prepare students for the real world of work?
Yeah, in fact, more than a third of our students are here for those reasons, whether it's wanting to learn mortuary science or air traffic control, whether they want to be an auto mechanic or a nurse or a firefighter. All of those are hugely important to the state of California and to our students. In many cases, we have students that are making minimum wage. They come into those programs, and within a couple of years, they get a degree. They get into emergency medicine technology, for example, and they're making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year. So we have hundreds of career and occupational vocational programs at colleges up and down the state. We are the largest workforce provider, training provider in the state of California.
So the return on investment that the state is making in community college, I think you would argue, is there's a pretty good return there because these students are going from minimum wage jobs to higher skilled, higher paid jobs, and therefore paying back more to the state for the rest of their careers.
Absolutely, and it takes place fairly rapidly. Now, we've, in the last two or three years, because of the budget, we've had to do some rationing of education. So that pathway to a degree or a certificate has slowed, but we're confident with the passage of Prop 30 and more money into higher education that we're going to add those classes back and smooth that transition, not only into career and occupational and the world of work, but to transfer as well.
Let's talk about vocational training and career technical training for a second. That's increasingly important. And as you said, the community colleges are really looked to as the place where that happens. What are you doing to increase vocational and technical training?
Well, we're constantly looking at new program areas. I mentioned air traffic control right here in the Sacramento region. That program was added just a couple of years ago because there was only one other way someone could learn to be an air traffic controller in the state of California. We are heavily involved in clean and green technology, not only in terms of new jobs in that area, but in greening up existing technology. So clean and green technology has an impact even on an auto mechanic anymore because there are systems in those automobiles that didn't exist a few years back.
Right. I mean, you try to tinker with an automobile these days, forget it, right? I mean, it's very sophisticated, that analysis.
That's right.
And so you're giving that training at community colleges.
Absolutely. ASE certification programs for Ford and Chevrolet, those are prevalent at colleges up and down the state.
Yeah. It's we actually were talking to folks a while ago about providing funding for air quality, for improved diesel. And one of the pushbacks that we were getting from folks from school districts was that their mechanics didn't know how to fix those new diesel engines. So they didn't want the money for new buses.
Well, and we train those mechanics out here at Mather Field right in Sacramento. They train them in Fresno and Los Angeles and San Diego. That kind of training is going on at colleges up and down the state.
Well, I want to thank Dr. Bryce Harris, Chancellor of the California Community College System, for joining us, as well as Deputy Legislative Analyst Jennifer Kuhn.
Up next, what impact will a new chancellor and a new budget have on the community colleges in the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Merced College President Ron Taylor, West Hills Lemoore College President Don Borkentin, and President of Modesto Junior College, Jill Stearns. That conversation in a moment.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. Community colleges in the San Joaquin Valley serve a large portion of the valley population. For many residents, community colleges are generally less expensive and more accessible than a traditional four-year college. Will a new statewide chancellor and a new focus on student success impact access and cost? We have three perspectives on those issues. West Hills College Lemoore President Don Borkentin, President of Modesto Junior College Jill Stearns,
and Merced College President Ron Taylor. Welcome to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Well, let me start with you, President Workentine, down there at West Hills College in Lemoore. What are your thoughts on the governor's focus on funding community colleges based on course completions rather than enrollment? And do you think that's a good idea, or do you think that the LAO's approach of an alternative funding model that balances student access with student success is a better approach?
Probably the latter would be better for us. We haven't fully seen what the governor's proposing. So there's, you know, a lot of attention needs to be paid to the details, I guess, if you will. We think we're already doing a great job with how we're serving our students and how we're funded. As you may or may not know, we are not funded until census week, which is the fourth week in a term. And so by that time, students have committed whether or not they're going to be in class for the term. So that's
about, what, a third of the term?
Yeah, it's about 20% or so of the term.
Okay. President Stearns, what are your thoughts on the governor's funding proposal versus the LAO's approach?
I would agree with President Workentine that there are certainly still lots of questions that remain unanswered in terms of the proposal, and we absolutely do need to find a way where we can balance student access with student success.
President Taylor at Merced College, what do you think? Do you think that the governor's plan is a good idea, or the LAO's got a better idea? Or do you have a better idea than either one of them?
Well, I tend to favor balance. You know, access is very important. I'm also glad, frankly, that the little we know about the governor's proposal, he did seem to recognize that time would be needed to work it out. And that is certainly the case. We don't want to be rushing in to a change in our funding model. I prefer balance because, frankly, not all completions are alike anyway.
You know, I want to ask you about that. You know, some people are concerned that if you have a funding model based on course completion or program completion, that's going to push students through, but it's also going to create an incentive maybe to lower standards, and maybe there'll be grade inflation because you get paid based on the number of people that you pass. I mean, are you worried at all about that, President Taylor?
Well, I tend to think that's not a real big issue. I know it's a concern for some people, and I know faculty have felt pressure on occasion in the past, or at least they get concerned about it. I tend to trust the faculty to be good judges of performance. We have had great inflation across higher education over the last couple of decades, and we've had that without any change in the funding model. You know, and I tend to think that the new focus on student learning outcomes is actually going to act as a kind of counter to whatever pressure might be felt.
Do you think, President Workentine, do you think at West Hills College in Lemoore that that's going to be a problem, that these kind of new funding models are going to encourage people to lower standards, or are they going to be counterbalanced by these outcome assessments?
Well, I would agree with Ron up in Merced. I don't believe our faculty are going to lower standards. Their focus is in the classroom and making sure students achieve their student learning outcomes as stated in their syllabi or their course outline. So they won't be the ones that lower standards. Where their pressure would be is probably on the student services side of the house to develop new programs to assist students to stay in the enrolled. Those areas, student services areas, have been the ones that have been decimated because of the budget cuts recently, along with some course sections and things like that, but it'd be more pressure on us to provide more assistance to students to stay enrolled, I would think.
President Stearns, what do you think? Do you think that the funding model is going to result in good things or bad things in terms of standards that your school and other schools apply toward students?
I believe that any change opens the door for a different way for someone who was trying to skirt the system. However, I believe in the integrity of our faculty. They really celebrate the success of their students when they transfer and move on to the next level. And so I think that that would remain firmly in place.
You know, one of the issues with community colleges, it's true with four-year colleges as well, is the number of unprepared and underprepared students. What's being done on your campus, President Stearns, to improve college readiness of those incoming students that you're seeing?
This is a long-standing challenge for community colleges, both in the Valley, across the state, and across the nation. And our system chancellor, Bryce Harris, mentioned yesterday that currently the number stands at 23%. 23% of the students that come to the California Community College system are college ready, meaning that they're ready to engage in transfer level, university level courses.
Wow, so over two thirds are not prepared.
Yes.
Wow. It's a high number.
So we have a wide variety of programs. We have a program called Early College. We have 2+2 articulation. We have a summer math jam. We have a first-year experience. We have learning communities, supplemental instruction, EOPS. We have a tremendous number of different programs that are all aimed at supporting those students that are coming to us without the skills in place to be successful in college-level work.
President Taylor, at Merced College, what are you doing to help those students that you're receiving that are underprepared and unprepared for college work?
I do agree that, community colleges tend to do very well in responding to students where they're at, the skill level they come in with. At Merced, we have a variety of services. President Stearns mentioned some of the ones we also have. We have something we call Study Central, which is a learning lab where individual students get hands-on help. We've got faculty in there as well as paraprofessional staff. Just an outstanding program. We've got a tutorial center. We've got a math lab and on. We've got an English lab. There's a variety of services available. And I think, frankly, a well-motivated student has what he or she needs. I think President Workentine mentioned something earlier that I think is going to continue to be an issue, and that is motivating students to actually access the services.
Yeah, I'm just, President Workentine, I want to follow up on, it sounds like there are a lot of opportunities for students who are underprepared and unprepared to get help. But that's got to put a financial strain on schools like West Hills. Is that really the fact that you're receiving these students that really aren't ready for college? Is that a big financial strain for your community college?
Yes, it has, particularly the last 4 years. Hopefully with the passage of Proposition 30 that this next year we will see some increased funding in the areas that were mentioned so we can provide these support services. All three of us are always looking for external funding in the form of grants to provide additional help, new programs, and
you're even doing fundraising, services. Fundraising and development, which was something that community college presidents really traditionally have not done. But these days, it seems like every college president is out there trying to raise money. Is that
exactly.
Pretty common?
Yes, and we're competing with the 4 years and other agencies for the same dollars. Many cases we're targeting the same individuals, but as I was trying to mention, the grant aspect, either from state grants or federal grants, does help all of us in some cases to meet our demand and meet our needs.
Well, President Workentine, how do you feel about the goal, the traditional goal of California Community Colleges for allowing open access? Is that competing with the goal of student success? I mean, too many resources being placed on folks that you've got that need remedial education, and it's really hurting those folks that or hurting the resources that can be put toward those folks that are ready to go to college and want to move forward. Is there a conflict there?
I don't know if it's a conflict. I think it's part of our mission. We don't just serve students that recently graduated from high school. Our probably average age of our students, at least here in Lemoore, is in the early 20s, which means we're getting a lot of adults that are coming back for retraining or to further their education and maybe get a better job in their lives. And so it's not just kids right out of high school that may be unprepared. It's the folks who haven't had math for 4 or 5 years or haven't had English for 4 or 5 years. But that's part of our mission. You know, it's not just the 18-year-olds that we're serving. It's everybody in our communities.
Do you see the same thing, President Stearns, at Modesto Junior College? I mean, do you see there really isn't this conflict between access and success?
I wouldn't call it a conflict, but I would say that the two challenge one another. And especially given the decreases in funding that the system has faced over the last 4 years, we have seen a significant impact on our access. And it just it makes the entire process more difficult, even for the most well-prepared student. So that's even further complicated for the student who doesn't come college-ready.
President Taylor, following up on what President Stearns just said, do you think that access and success, student success are kind of challenging one another at the community college level?
Well, we need to find a balance. Obviously, we want to provide as much access as possible, but no one likes to fail. That's insidious in an institution and in the people who come to us. We need people to succeed. And to do that, part of what the fiscal crisis has done is focused our attention on what is it we really need in terms of student support in order to help students succeed. I think over time, actually, this could be a healthy process of, focusing us on what is it that will make the difference and what does that cost. And then, of course, we have to turn around and secure state funding for it.
Yeah. And one of the issues, too, is should tuitions be increased, for students? Should some of that funding come from increased student payments? So one of the issues is tuition freeze or not. Another question is, what about this unit cap proposal where you've got these super seniors that are there for years and years and they're kind of drawing resources from other students who are trying to get through the system? What are your thoughts on that, Professor Taylor? I'm sorry, President Taylor.
Well, I guess I agree with the LAO that said tuition freeze is not such a great idea on the one hand. On the other hand, increasing fees just the way they have been in the past, kind of willy-nilly, one semester to another, one year to another, it's been kind of maddening. And now it's difficult for us to adjust to. It's difficult for the students. I prefer some kind of indexing of community college fees so that we keep them low, so that students are not, they don't experience sticker shock.
Right.
A lot of the students who, come to us actually have their fees waived through the Board of Governors fee waiver due to their financial need. But even so, if fees go up dramatically like they have over the last few years, there's a kind of sticker shock effect.
Yeah, and they've gone up. Whatever research that I've done indicates that the fees have more than doubled since 2007, 2008. One hand, but on the other hand, you read other stuff that says that still California is relatively less expensive than a lot of other states. I think our tuition rates for community colleges is among the lowest, if not the lowest, in the nation. So, President Warkentin, what do you think? Do you think a tuition freeze is a good idea? Do you think that there should be these unit caps to deal with super seniors?
I agree with both. I think we ought to have a tuition freeze for at least for a few years to stable out and see what we can do with reaching out to all of our students. I do believe in a unit cap. I think we do have students at all of our campuses that probably time to move on, if you will. They find a home at our community colleges and take a lot of courses maybe that they should probably focus in on either transferring.
It kind of makes me think of a parent with a child that doesn't want to leave home. You guys are dealing with students who don't want to leave college.
Some of that, but that's just a small number. But I would believe in a unit cap and give priority to students that are just coming in.
President Stearns, I want to give you a chance to kind of weigh in on this. What do you think? Tuition freeze, unit caps for super seniors?
I think it's important for people to understand that when our registration fees increase, those dollars are not collected and held by the local community college. So there's not a one-to-one increase between what a student pays per unit and how the colleges are funded. So that's an important piece in this discussion. I would like to see the tuition held. If we can have some restoration dollars back to the colleges under that scenario, that would be tremendous. And I agree with President Warkentin. We do have a few students who need additional encouragement besides that of our faculty and staff saying, you are well prepared. It's time for you to move on to the university.
Okay. Well, up next, we're going to talk about improving graduation and transfer rates at the Valley's community colleges. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
from News Talk 580 KMJ. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. Can community colleges become more effective in graduating students and or in helping them transfer to a four-year university? And can they do it in a more cost-effective manner? We're talking with President of the Modesto Junior College, Jill Stearns, Merced College President, Ron Taylor, and West Hills Lemoore College President, Don Warkentine. So, President Warkentine, let's start with you. What about this issue of controlling costs? People are talking about, you know, maybe we should use more online instruction. They're arguing that it's less expensive way to deliver a comparable educational experience. There are, of course, others that say, well, wait a second, maybe we're not going to see the cost savings that we think we're going to see, and or students are not going to get the same educational experience. Where do you come down on online education?
Well, certainly it's the new technology, it's the wave of the future. It serves a need for students that have work schedules or family schedules that they can't come to the campus. It's a way for them to achieve their goals. But there are some students that can't survive in that kind of environment. They need the support. They need the face-to-face interaction with the instructors. So I think face-to-face will still be with us.
President Stearns, what do you think? Online education, good idea, bad idea?
I think it is a very good idea, and as President Warkentine mentioned, it is a phenomenal option for those who either have work schedules, family commitments, other things that would not allow them to otherwise engage, but it is not for everyone, and the infrastructure is a significant expense.
Yeah. What do you think, President Taylor? Is online education the answer?
Well, not if it's pushed as a panacea. It's not one size fits all. Online instruction fits some people better than others, and some subjects better than others. Mm-hmm. You know, not all learning is the same, and I think, it's a good option and certainly needs to be supported. I think when we bureaucrats look to it to save money, we're kind of making a mistake. Really ought to be looking at what's appropriate as a learning methodology, and then support that methodology.
Yeah, that's a good point. Kind of the tube sock approach to a problem is probably not the right way to go about it, because there are things that are unique. Let me follow up with another question, Professor Taylor, on this idea of using credit by exam, another way to supposedly save money. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it can be very effective. But again, it kind of depends on how you do it. Some subjects are easier to test, and some tests are better than others. Above all, we need to have, certificated faculty making the judgments and designing the tests. And I think we've got a pretty decent track record of using it in the past. If people are wanting to push it for more and more of the curriculum, my caution would be, let's not see this as just a way to save money. Let's look at it as a way to help students move along, document their learning so they don't have to spend as many years in school, and can be placed appropriately in whatever classes they need to be in. But, over time, we probably ought to be tracking the effectiveness of the method.
Yeah.
How does the outcome work down the road?
Yeah, President Warkentine, how do you feel about credit by exam?
Well, we all have some of that right now. We do have some courses where students can challenge and take an exam, but we caution our students that once they take their exam, that's their grade. It's not something that they can redo and redo and redo to get a better grade. It's a one-time-only type of situation that we're employing right now. So if that's how it would continue, I'm not so sure that there would be a lot of students that would take that kind of chance. As Ron said, certainly courses like maybe some computers and maybe math would be good examples of where you can test out. But other courses, I don't know.
Yeah, President Stearns, Modesto Junior College. What about credit by exam? I mean, are you seeing a lot of that at your college? And the statewide statistics I think I read were very small, about 1% of the credit being given is being given by exam. Do you see more of that at your college?
We don't see lots of credit by exam, and I think it has some of the inherent challenges that standardized tests like the SAT and ACT do, where it's a snapshot of a student performance on one given day and not necessarily the best measure of the student's understanding of a subject. And it's something that causes a significant amount of stress for the student. And so it's not very often that they will select that option.
You know, President Stearns, I want to ask you about something that statewide Chancellor Bryce Harris said when we had a conversation with him earlier in the program. I asked him about centralization at the state level. Most of the reports that you read, whether it's the Student Task Force or the LAO or the Little Hoover Commission, all advocate that the community college system should be more centralized in the chancellor's office. It was interesting that he seemed to be less enthusiastic about that idea than probably you'd expect, because he's basically saying, no, I don't necessarily want to have all of that power. What are your thoughts about local control versus setting statewide standards?
I would agree with Chancellor Harris in terms of especially of instructional programming and being able to be flexible to meet the needs of our local community. But where I think that our entire system would benefit from centralization is in purchasing. Mm-hmm. We consume lots of paper in the 112 colleges in our system. If we had a contract so that we had centralized purchasing and a negotiated price for paper, that could bring significant savings. And that's just one example. We could look at automated library systems. We could look at student databases. We could look at computer purchases. There are lots of ways where centralized purchasing might bring significant cost savings to the system.
So, President Taylor at Merced College, economies of scale would be a good idea in terms of centralization, but local control in terms of maybe curriculum and other things. What are your thoughts?
Yes. I mean, generally, I think we know our local population better. That's one really big reason for local control of the colleges. And you need to tailor the curriculum, at least in some areas, to the local population. In vocational training, for example, different colleges have different programs because of the needs of the region. There are some subject matters in our curriculum across the state where some common standards is not a bad idea. Okay. You know, we're already headed in that direction with things like English, math, et cetera. Our student success initiative basically is acknowledging this, and I think the movement towards standard transfer degrees mm-hmm. and pathways into CSU is a good one. It helps us kind of streamline a bit.
You know, I want to ask President Workentine, what are your thoughts on this debate about local control versus setting statewide standards?
Well, I would agree with both Jill and Ron. We do have some common common areas where we're doing that right now, and that is with our trying to develop a common assessment instrument for all colleges to accept, at least in the Central Valley. We're all part of the Central Valley Higher Education Consortium, mm-hmm. and one of our goals is to develop a common assessment model where somebody taking a placement test at Modesto Junior College would be accepted at West Coast College Lemoore and vice versa. So that's one area where we're trying to standardize things. Ron mentioned courses. We have a statewide project called the Course ID Number, where English is English and, you know, algebra is algebra and things like that. It's acceptable up and down the state. So those are some areas. But as far as local control, California's too big. With 112 community colleges, it's not like we only have 9 UCs and 23 CSUs. We have 112 community colleges in all parts of the state, and tried to have one agency, I guess, to be the board or whatever for all this large group. I don't think it's possible.
You know, President Taylor, I want to follow up on something you mentioned about vocational training. I mean, everybody knows that's increasingly important. What are you doing at your college to improve or increase a vocational and technical training?
Well, I have to say, I think in the fiscal crisis the last few years, we're kind of happy we've managed to hold on to the programs we have and support them well enough so students can actually learn. You know, a couple of years ago, we managed to expand our nursing program at Merced by adding a cohort to it. They operate in terms of student cohorts that are admitted at a particular point in time, and we expanded a couple of years ago, and I'm glad for that. Anything we can do in that direction is good, but we're just kind of glad that we've, you know, continue the programs we have and continue to provide access to students in these programs.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests, Merced College President Ron Taylor, West Hills Lamar College President Don Wachentin, and President of Modesto Junior College Jill Stearns. Thanks all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.